Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Tulsa Opera opens its season with George Bizet's The Pearl Fishers, a story of love and friendship set in the South Seas. Sarah Schaefer sings the role of Layla, the priestess who's at the center of a love triangle with Zerga, the leader of the Pearl Fishers, played by Yung Peng Wong, and his best friend Nadir, sung by Aaron Blake. The Pearl Fishers also marks the first production of the new leadership team of Tulsa Opera, General Director and CEO Greg Weber, and Artistic Director, noted composer Tobias Picker. Weber has collaborated with a number of arts organizations during his career and was the director of production at San Francisco Opera and Houston Grand Opera. Picker is one of America's finest contemporary composers who's written 5 operas and is at work on his 6th to be premiered by New York City Opera, as well as numerous works for orchestra and chamber ensembles. Tulsa Opera presents The Pearl Fishers by George Bizet this Friday evening at 7:30 and Sunday afternoon at 2:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall. Picker and Weber join me today to preview the weekend performances ahead and to share their vision for the opera company. Greg and Tobias, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's great to be here.
We're looking forward to your first collaboration as general director and artistic director for Tulsa Opera with this production of Bizet's The Pearl Fishers. So since you guys have come together over the last few months, what have been the discussions about how you see the future of Tulsa Opera? Greg, if I can start with you.
I have to admit, just because of the time that Tobias and I have been in the industry and working in opera, is that one of the things that attracted us to Tulsa was its rich history in discovering young singers, discovering singers in new roles. And that's really, every time we talk about where we want the company to go, the first thing we talk about is who are the up-and-coming singers that we believe need either a platform or need to be heard by an audience and demonstrated into the industry that these are going to be some great stars. And that's always the first place we start.
From your viewpoint, Tobias?
We do start with the voices, and we are looking for the best voices that we can find in the world. And I think we recognize the tradition of the Tulsa Opera going back to the days of Sutherland and Bjorling and Sills.
The Ed Purington days, when the big stars did come here. Now it's, I think, the opera is of a size and that... Do you want to still bring in the big stars?
aren't any Sutherlands or Sills or those days are kind of over, I think, of the superstars who can sell out a house or sell out the Met. They used to do that, but they don't do that anymore. So there's so many high-level, top-shelf singers, world-class, for lack of a better word, that I don't feel we have to bring in recognizable names. It's nice if, I guess, once in a while we do, but I think what I can tell from studying the Tulsa Opera's history is exciting to the public here is being in on the launching of great careers. For instance, Joyce DiDonato, Stephanie Blythe, now the young tenor David Portillo. These are people who sang here before they were known. And so in casting, we look at who we think will be the stars of tomorrow.
And then, Rich, building on that, what we're doing is we're actually taking, I mean, opera combines so many, it combines 5 different art forms inside of it. So how do you take a young singer who you know that, or we feel, as though that voice is going to be superb? How do you surround them with a very skilled, knowledgeable team to build them? How do you help them build character? And what you see inside of how we built the director, the associate choreographer, the conductor for Pearl Fishers. So all 4 of these young singers that are singing the principal roles, it's their role debut. So we bring in, Tobias brought in Maestro Emmanuel Plasson, an actual French conductor to help them with their French, to help them understand why the diction and why Bizet wrote certain things are so important to sing in a particular fashion. And then he also brought in Denny Sayers, who is not just a director, but a choreographer who has worked with some of the giants inside of the industry. I mean, Denny is a frequent collaborator with Francesca Zambello, Danny Slater, David McVicker. I mean, this is someone who can go into a libretto and really bring a character out of someone. So it's not just that we're focused on great voices. We're focused on how to create the next great Joyce DiDonato.
When you have, absolutely. When you have 4 singers singing their role debut, how important is it to have, say, somebody who's intimately familiar with the material, like Emmanuel Plasson or your stage director, to help guide these singers through this first debut in the role?
I think we could do it with somebody that has never conducted Pearl Fishers, but it sure is a help that Maestro Plasson has done the work twice before and knows it inside and out, all the versions, and that he is a really fine musician, fine conductor. He was really born to this work because of his father, who's the great Michel Plasson, and he now is often called to cover for his father when he can't conduct. So this is a great boon to our singers to be able to work with Emmanuel. But it's not a requirement that a conductor have conducted an opera before to do one. And we will have some conductors who haven't done, who will be also making their role debut opera debut. In that case, we might have somebody else involved in the artistic team who does know the opera intimately.
Well, as you've been watching rehearsals so far, how are the singers taking to this new role? I mean, I imagine every singer has their own process of how they sort of inhabit the role.
They're having a blast. It's because it's new. It might as well be a brand new opera. The only difference between their singing a world premiere and making a role debut in this is that there are many recordings of this. If it was a world premiere, there would be nothing to refer back to. But they're all very excited, very happy, and they all sound amazing.
There's already in the room, the way that Denny Sayers, our stage director, is approaching this, is there's a tremendous tension between Nuribad and Zurga, because, of course, you know, Zurga gets voted the leader right off the bat. So she's built this tension between the two. And already in the first rehearsal between Yunpeng and Alexei, already you're feeling them work against each other. We're only a weekend of rehearsals. And then there's a nice magic between Aaron and Sarah, Aaron Blake, who plays Nadir, and Sarah Schaefer, who plays Layla, that we watched last night, their first love scene together. And, oh, there's such great just connection and magic between the two. So, you know, both Tobias and I are keeping our fingers crossed that this grows, because it's already, we're amazed that this cast is gelling so quickly.
When a soprano and tenor are happy with each other, that makes
a good
for
thing.
A very happy rehearsal room.
Well, now, the first encounter I had with the Pearl Fishers was playing the overture like years and years ago. So I know that, and of course, the great friendship duet in the first act is, you know, that's just an incredible duet that's sort of a part of the literature. This opera is sort of the ultimate love triangle, wouldn't you say? Wouldn't you say that's how you would describe it? Tobias, as a composer of operas, how would you describe the sort of the dramatical setup of the Pearl Fishers?
You could say it's the ultimate love triangle, but many operas are the ultimate love triangle. It's a variation on the actual triangle, which is the basis of all theater. All drama is the triangle. Love, hate, love, you know, revenge, whatever. But it is a love triangle.
In a way, it's the love between two friends, pulled apart by love, the love for the same woman, but yet their friendship survives.
Well, it also involves some lying and deceit and covering up.
Well, it wouldn't be an opera if you didn't have that.
It's really a slice of life, but in this magical removed kingdom that Bizet imagined in Ceylon, and that Zandra Rhodes, this iconic British fashion designer, has made into a whole world of color and design excitement.
Within the story, you have these two friends who say this woman's not going to come between them. And of course, as they sing it, you know she will, and she does. But eventually, now, depending on the ending, because I think Bizet wrote, several different revised endings, at least one that I know of.
Two or three, I think.
Yeah. But it all ends with Zurga forgiving the couple, sending them on their way, and then he has to face the music.
And then he sacrifices himself. But we're adding, Denny has added a really, in conversations that Denny and Tobias have had together, they're adding a real twist in here that other productions of Pearl Fishers have not had. Nuribad, you know, Neurobrad brings a particular vocal equality inside of the production. And he is a dramatic character that really hasn't, in a lot of productions, been used as a vehicle for the tension. And what you'll see inside of this production is how Danny is bringing, and Alexei are bringing, the character of Neurobrad to actually be part of the wedge that divides this triangle, and how Neurobrad becomes a force inside of the opera for the dramatic ending that occurs.
That does bring the character to life. Danny is imagining a life for the character he usually doesn't have. Most often the role is sung by a bass. In our production, it's sung by a bass baritone, Alexei Bogdanov. And I consider him to be a great singing actor. And I think that he's fairly young, in his mid-30s, I think. Mm-hmm. But I think he will become known as world's great singing actors. So that's a real boon to our director, to have a Neurobrad that doesn't just want to stand and sing, and that who really wants to sink his teeth into a character.
So it sounds like you're making this character a little more three-dimensional. I mean, isn't Neurobrad usually just, you know, he's the villain of the piece, he's the guy that's jealous of everything, of Zerga, of everything else, and he's out to get his revenge in his own way, sort of a two-dimensional character. Was that sort of your discussions with
I think that's one of the problems that the piece has inherent in it. Bizet was very, very young when he wrote it and got very distracted with other things after he finished it. And he might have, maybe had he lived longer than 36 years or whatever, he might have revisited it. I don't know. But I think just fleshing out the character a little bit, as we've done, makes the opera better. Since opera is a collaborative art form, you can always make operas better than you want to always make them better.
Right. And in the case of this piece, you mentioned he was very young, but already you can sort of see the seeds of Carmen that would come 10 years later or so.
Yeah, it's such a different, for me, it's such a different piece than Carmen. I love them both, but this is not to say that Carmen isn't sophisticated, but this piece compositionally is astoundingly sophisticated for a 24-year-old in the mid-19th century. There were a lot of sophisticated 24-year-old composers, so it wasn't that unusual. But certainly today, it would be most unusual for a 24-year-old to be able to construct an opera that is so solid, so through-composed, and so musically and emotionally satisfying.
Now, as a composer yourself, is there a moment in this opera that you say, wow, this is something that sort of, you know, it's 100 years later, so but it's something that might have informed your own sort of sense of drama in creating your own operas from this particular piece. Is there something in this that sort of would do that?
Well, perhaps. There are many, many things about this piece that I love, but one of the things that strikes me every time I hear any portion of it is, as I said, the through-composed aspect of it. Bizet was using leitmotifs before Wagner cashed in on them, so to speak. made he's known for the leitmotif, but right. Bizet, when you go back to this early piece of Bizet, you refer to the great duet between Zerga and Nadir. That music permeates the opera. It's everywhere. And it's fascinating how he uses it and reuses it and develops that, just boils it down to the barest cell and essential, and then expands it again. So that kind of thing, that is something that fascinates me, and that one can never really have too much of a thoroughly composed opera that has no holes in it. I don't think it has any musical or dramatic holes in it. It's just the musical fabric holds together perfectly. Would have to have survived 160, 70 years.
Yeah, 160.
And many of those years, it was unknown. It wasn't until the 20th century that it really started to be played again.
Yeah. It wasn't well received. I mean, nothing really happened with it after the premiere.
Right.
And it wasn't done again until 10 years after his death.
It was 25 years.
After his death.
25 years after, 11 years after his death, 25 years after the premiere, yeah. Before it was played again.
Yeah. Well, you've given me a perfect segue into hearing some music from Bizet. Well, here's a portion of that friendship duet. I should mention my guests today are the artistic director and general director of Tulsa Opera, artistic director Tobias Picker, a marvelous composer in his own right, and general director Greg Weber, who are now collaborating to put together Tulsa Opera's season this year and in future years. They open their season with Bizet's The Pearl Fishers, and we're going to hear music from the piece. This is the friendship duet, sung by Jussi Björling and Robert Merrill. This is probably the version of all versions here. So here's some music here on Studio Tulsa. That's music from The Pearl Fishers. Tulsa Opera will open their season with Bizet's The Pearl Fisher. My guests today are Artistic Director Tobias Picker and General Director Greg Weber.
I'd like to point out the tenor you just heard, Jussi Björling, actually sang in Tulsa a year before his death in 1959,
true.
The role of Manrico in Trovatore. So, and he's considered one of the greatest tenors who ever lived.
That's right. And as you pointed out, this is sort of your mission working together is to find these next great voices and bring them to Tulsa Opera audiences. So as you guys are starting the planning, I know you're not going to be talking about, well, 2 years from now we'd like to do this, but what is the general sort of artistic direction for the opera company with your collaboration? Greg, let me start with you.
Well, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about that, and one of the reasons I was so excited to be working with Tobias is that, you know, of course, Tobias is a living composer, so we both have been committed to a living opera style. In my work with Houston and San Francisco, I've helped produce many, many world premieres. So, you know, I certainly can say that having something that touches our everyday life is important to us. How we incorporate that into the repertoire, we're still considering. We think that sometimes contemporary opera can be a little difficult for some people to approach. So we're going to find entry points for them, and that's going to be evolving, not just on the stage, but also in different type of outreach programs, how we use our young artists in introducing new composers. Certainly with Tobias here, we are very interested. And when Carlisle Floyd was here a year ago, which you did a wonderful interview with him, we have a strong interest in introducing the Tulsa audience to a composer series so that they can get accustomed to understanding that these are unlike Bizet, Tobias Picker as a
is
composer
right
is alive. You can ask him why he wrote this.
Now, when you have an artistic director who is a composer, I think the natural thought is that you will have your own work on display. Is that sort of in your future?
Yes, I think it would be extremely odd if my work was absent from the Tulsa Opera. It would be very strange for me to be artistic director and only present works by dead composers or other living composers, which is not to say that I don't enjoy producing the work of dead composers, as long as they're great dead composers, and other living composers, as long as they're great composers. So I am interested, and I think the it's only logical that some of my work is heard here eventually, but I'm also interested in introducing Tulsa to composers I feel will be regarded as the masters of tomorrow.
Yeah,
where we struggle is he has five operas, he's working on his sixth.
Right.
And I of course have favorites that I like to hear, and he has his favorite. So that's where the struggle is. But will you be hearing a Picker opera in the future? Absolutely. I just want to finish. There are a couple other things that are going to be integral and core into what we're going to be producing artistically. A very important item for both of us is local talent and homegrown talent. For example, in Pearlfishers, you're going to see that we're featuring a dance academy called Kripalia, which did a great production called Shakti this past summer. And when I had seen that production, I immediately reached out to Tobias and Denny and said, we have to find a way to involve this particular choreographer, her name is Priya Raju, inside of this production. And we're featuring her dance and her academy now in this production.
You know, it's interesting you should mention that, because earlier in previous directorships, that was a pretty important part of the company, is that even if it was the singing role that has like two lines, you know, we were featuring local talent. And it seems like the company's gotten away from that in the past few years. So that's going to be an active part of the company?
Very much so. And I know that Tobias is considering not just how we put young artists out there, but how do we feature some singers in our chorus? How do we listen to them? How do we, people inside, how do we pull principals out of the orchestra and be able to put together perhaps a chamber opera? And that may be a strong connection to how we start reintroducing a contemporary or an American opera series, is that by using local artists allows us not just to focus on what's great about living opera, what's great about a Tobias Picker opera, but also what's great about the artists that we have here in Tulsa.
Now, this season's already set with the Pearlfishers, Tulsa, and you guys just came together, I guess, this summer, really.
Oh. Tobias and I have known each other for several years and have worked together in other projects. But
I'm saying, you know, I always hear that the timeline for presenting an opera is like 2-3 years down the road. Are you playing catch up, or are you what your plans are doing? Are they looking at as happening as soon as next season?
Well, we are planning next season now, and we have it sketched out, actually, most of it, and we're looking at long-range planning as well. That it's nice to have a roadmap 2-5 years down the line, but in the time we live in now, it isn't, you don't have to book a singer 4-5 years ahead of time to get a great singer. So it is possible to put together a great production of an opera in a very short time, which is, I think, what we did. We did put this together in a very short time.
But I have to say that, you know, Tobias has already placed holds on singers that we're really excited about bringing in. So he is working very, very hard. And we do have certainly a stable of singers that we are really excited about coming back next, that not only come back, but probably we hope these new singers that have not premiered in Tulsa before.
Now, in this cast, you have several premieres, company premieres, well, along with role premieres.
Role premieres, all our four principals, our director, who's an international director, from London, but has choreographed for Chicago Lyric, Washington National, San Francisco, Houston. But this is her directorial debut in the U.S. It's also her company Tulsa debut. It's Maestro Plesson's company debut and Tulsa debut. Mm-hmm. There may be I'm forgetting. Other
Everyone inside of the cast is having a role and a company debut. We're really excited. Almost every artist this season is having both a company debut and a role debut.
And so you're planning on opening some ears here.
Also the chorus. I mean, the chorus, Burl Fisher's hasn't been done here since the late 90s.
Yeah, since 1995.
So probably there may not be anyone in the chorus who's done it before. I'm not sure about
that. Not for a long time. But we're inside of repertoire. What we won't tell you specifically what we're looking for. That'll have to be another show.
Yeah.
But we will tell you that we are both very broad in the types of opera that we like. So you will see, instead of three Italian operas, you're going to see a mix and a blend. You're going to definitely see German opera. You're going to see Russian opera. I'm a big lover of Janacek, so at some point we're going to see there. Tobias has his favorites that we are going to see. So you're going to see in Tulsa a much more broad swath of selection that you can choose from as a patron.
All right. There are certain areas of the repertoire that Tulsa has not had an opportunity to experience. Some of the Russian operas really need to be done here, I think, among others.
Strauss.
Yeah, Strauss would be one that has not been heard very often at all. Well, you're going to introduce four great singers to this community in your debut production, Bizet's The Pearl Fishers. My guests today, Greg Weber and Tobias Picker, the general director and artistic director for Tulsa Opera. A couple seasons ago, we lost the third opera. Is there any plans down the road, if you can build your audiences, to bring that third opera back?
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, this season,
have a third opera.
We will have a third. We considered a four show season because the Snow Queen is actually our TYO.
Right.
Our Tulsa Youth Opera program has grown so much, and the kids are so good that we're actually expanding what that show will be with an American premiere of the Snow Queen, which is right. Based on the Hans Christian Andersen story and what Disney made so great with the movie Frozen.
Right.
But the Puccini to Pop night, that special event that night is on a Saturday night because it's our attempt. We couldn't change because both Tobias and I started so late, we couldn't change what the calendar was. But we could focus on trying to get back that Saturday night, which is the first step for us getting back to a Saturday, Friday, Sunday. So yes, that is certainly something we're trying to choreograph inside of all of the schedules with the many wonderful arts groups here in town.
All right. Well, we wish you great success with the Pearl Fishers. Greg and Tobias, thank you very much for joining
us.
Thank you, Rich.
Tulsa Opera's General Director and CEO, Greg Weber, and Artistic Director, Tobias Picker, joining us to preview the upcoming production of the opera of Georges Bizet's The Pearl Fishers. The Pearl Fishers will be presented this Friday evening at 7:30 and Sunday at 2:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. We leave you with more music from The Pearl Fishers. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.